This is Audible.
Podium Audio presents Defying Destiny, Book 3 of The War of Broken Mirrors, written by Andrew Rowe, performed by Nick Podell. Prologue 1. Adon. Senses of Irony. Donovan Taylor's jail cell was surprisingly well furnished. There was a wooden table toward the center, piled high with books and scrolls he dearly wished that he could read. An unused chair sat beside it, looking temptingly comfortable. The bed looked like an excellent place to rest, in spite of the dust. No one had changed the blankets or pillows in some time, it seemed. This was unsurprising, since it was little more than a prop to illuminate a potential for comfort just beyond his reach. None of those things drew his attention like the mirror, however. It was a tall standing mirror with a golden frame, the surface clean and bright. That, at least, was being properly maintained. He stared at it with the full knowledge that someone somewhere might be staring right back at him. How had he failed to see it sooner? It was a shame that he had no way of taking action. He couldn't approach the mirror to write a message or smash it apart. He was, of course, chained to the wall on the furthest side of the room.
All it took was one mistake, one minor miscalculation. How many decisions will it take to fix things?
Before he could answer himself, the room's solitary door began to open.
No knock? Donovan inquired. How rude.
A familiar woman stepped inside, her flame-red hair pulled back into a neat bun. She was not wearing the robe of a court sorcerer, however, as she had when she'd worked in his service. No, she wore the colors of a paladin of Taos now, her true affiliation from the beginning, if his suspicion was not mistaken.
Lydia Scryer,
a thin smile played across his lips.
I'm a tad surprised. I'd expected you to flee the country after deposing me.
The woman stepped fully inside, waited a moment with a glance toward the doorway, then shut the door. She turned her gaze toward him.
Deposed implies rulership. You were never the true ruler of this kingdom, Adon.
He shrugged a shoulder as best he could with the restraints.
Ruler? Not in the sense of being a king, certainly. But a king is a thing of birthrights and bloodlines. I was something greater, something purer. I was a god to the people of this city, and that godhood was earned.
You were a charlatan who took advantage of the population's ignorance to spread your false doctrine. Then, when there was a threat, the prince coming of age, you never intended to allow him to earn his rightful throne.
Donovan's lips twisted into a frown.
Is that what you believe? I had no intention of denying Byron the throne. I delayed the coronation because of the assassination attempt. I was working to discover who was responsible.
Lydia leaned back against the wall opposite from him, her expression neutral. She glanced away for just a moment and then turned back to him.
Regardless of what your intentions were with Byron, you were misleading the people of this city. Why? You believed in sharing knowledge once, didn't you?
Donovan nodded, feeling exhaustion seeping in, deeper than the cold of the chains.
Of course, but they cast me aside. Everyone did. Even the gods themselves. Especially the gods.
He shook his head.
The people of this city needed someone, something to believe in. A god who actually cared for them. Someone who would be present in the world, willing to tend to their needs. I intended at first to tell everyone how my new form of magic worked, but as I learned more, I began to see the limitations. And those same limits are why I could not take the risk.
You were hoarding magical items,
Lydia folded her arms,
because you needed them to fuel your sorcery. If you spread the word that anyone could gain access to magic by linking themselves to enchanted objects, it would have created fierce competition. Moreover, if the Queen Regent could reproduce what you'd learned, it would have rendered you expendable.
Ah. Donovan's eyes gleamed as he gave Lydia a closer look. You do understand. You read my notes, then?
Lydia waved a hand. Some of them. The Queen Regent denied me access to your library after we'd apprehended you, but I understood the basics.
She shook her head.
I understand a degree of what you were doing and why. I might have even been convinced to agree with parts of it. But you crossed a couple lines.
Oh? Tell me, Miss Scryer, what invisible lines were so important to you?
Lydia pointed to the sigil of Cytera pinned to her tunic.
One, you outlawed other religions in your city and persecuted anyone who wouldn't follow you.
He leaned against the chains, tightening his jaw.
People spend their entire lives with knees bent in hope of being the one in 10,000 that will be blessed by divine gifts. But there is no amount of prayer that will bring the gods to your rescue. Eretar will not visit you and bring you knowledge from his travels. Lysari will not heal your ill, and Lysandre will not cry over your grave when you die.
He turned his head aside.
She won't even notice. Because she abandoned you and everyone else long ago.
You may believe that, but it doesn't give you the right to deny others the ability to worship as they choose.
Pah! I never sought to punish those who were foolish enough to continue worshiping the absent. Who someone wants to whisper to in the dark of night is their own business, even if I don't approve.
Lydia raised an eyebrow, waving at the chains.
Then why put Talion in here when he arrived?
Donovan laughed.
Is that what this is about? A bit of ironic revenge for how I treated your champion, please. I didn't even know your swordsman was in the city until after he'd escaped. If I had, I'd have invited him for dinner, not thrown him into a cell.
I have no reason to believe that.
Her expression showed hesitation in spite of her words. Doubt. That was good.
She never should have let him talk. Believe what you will. But from the moment I heard the Sakess was available in this city, I knew it was a potential asset. You understand my style of sorcery, at least to some limited degree. Can you imagine what would be possible with a link to a weapon of that kind?
Unfortunately, I can. That's part of why I assume you wanted to steal it.
Steal? Quite the opposite. I doubt my body could have handled the strain of connecting with an object like that. I would have made a god of that man. Someone malleable. A sign of the old giving way to the new.
He sighed.
Oh, it's a shame that things ended the way they did. I'm still not certain you understand how completely you were manipulated. Tell me, who controls this city now?
King Byron,
she answered automatically. Donovan smiled.
It's cute that you think that.
You refer to his Thorngard contacts?
Ah, excellent. That confirms one thing. Let's see how much deeper I can go. You say Thorngard, but do you believe Amir Thorngard was the mastermind?
She shrugged. It doesn't matter. Byron is king, and he's reopened the option to worship anyone the citizens please. Even you, amusingly enough.
Ah, yes. They dress me up every once in a while, keeping void-imbued shackles within my robes, and parade me about the kingdom to assure everyone I'm still watching over them.
He let out a bitter chuckle.
I'm sure they'll find a good enough actor to replace me eventually.
I don't think acting is the issue.
Lydia glanced to her side again, then shook her head.
I think they're still hoping to pry how your magic works out of you to make a real replacement.
Oh, they've tried, I assure you. But interrogating me has proven less than useful.
Lydia frowned.
Why?
I've forgotten some pertinent details.
His smile turned victorious.
Forgotten?
She frowned.
Knowledge sorcery. Or memory, perhaps? You either overused them or lost those memories deliberately?
A bit of both, truly. The intent was to make certain that the full depths of my secrets could only be discovered through a combination of my own knowledge and Morella's, as well as access to our notes. We did not wish to take the risk that others could steal our work simply by capturing one of us. We were, it would appear, at least somewhat successful.
Such a waste.
Lydia sighed.
I agree, dear, I agree. And you can take a bit of responsibility for that loss.
Her hands tightened. I did what I needed to do. You were experimenting on children.
Donovan felt an old anger building inside him to cure them of a fatal illness. If I'd had enough time.
I read enough of your notes to know that's not the full story. You weren't just looking for a cure. You were testing the limits of applying Dominion marks on living creatures. The Uvar children were a unique opportunity for you, since they had practically no Dominion essence to start with. They were even easier to work with than human children would have been, and you always had the pretense of saying you were trying to fix their condition. Moreover, that was only the first step of your plan. I'm not done! You learned early on that linking them to a single Dominion wouldn't fix their problem. The child's body would simply be flooded with essence of a single type, which would be fatal. Linking them to items with multiple Dominions was the next step, and you made progress by using items linked to protection and stability. That was real progress. Perhaps if you'd continued down that line, you would have found a cure. Maybe linking them to several different items, each containing a fraction of what they needed to live. Lydia shook her head. But you abandoned that line of research in favor of another. You were working on linking the children to each other and to humans.
I didn't have the kind of resources necessary to find or construct dozens of Dominion-marked items for every child. But if I could pair a human with a Rethri child, sharing their essence...
You might be able to stabilize the child that way at some cost to the human essence donor.
Lydia nodded.
A reasonable enough plan? Perhaps it could have worked. But that's not what you were doing, was it?
She reached into a pouch at her side, removing a piece of paper. On that paper was a 6x10 grid, with a single rune representing a Dominion in each section. In the center was a single circle, with lines stretching outward to every single grid space. There were scribbled notes on the side and bottom of the page, illegible to Donovan without his glasses, but he knew what they said.
A reproduction of one of the pages in your notebook. At first I thought it was a simple cosmological map, one of many attempts to organize the Dominions into a coherent format.
Lydia shook her head.
But upon examining the notations,
she waved a hand at the text on the bottom,
I realized it was nothing of the kind.
Is this what you're here for?
Donovan deflated.
To chastise me for ideas that never came to be? It was a concept, a hypothetical. Nothing more.
You were planning to use children as batteries, Adon. You'd mark them with a Dominion, keep them in some form of stasis, and link them to yourself. And rather than giving them a fraction of your strength to make them stable, you'd draw on their power whenever you needed it.
Donovan set his jaw.
Only the ones I couldn't save.
He shook his head.
There were those among them that would not have survived even with the best care I could have provided. This would have given them meaning. Purpose.
Right. The purpose of making you more powerful.
Lydia wrinkled her nose in disgust.
I never sought power purely for its own sake.
Donovan paused, his breath stolen by the now familiar pangs of regret.
With one child serving as a self-replenishing source for each Dominion, I would have had the means to enchant items of any type that I needed. Eventually, I would have found the necessary combination of items to treat the other children, and I would have had the means to produce them in high quantities.
Sadly, Lydia showed no sign of acknowledging how eminently reasonable his plan had been. Her eyes simply narrowed, focused with an intensity he could not understand.
Riala's brother. Was he one of the ones you couldn't save? Were all those years she spent in your service going to be rewarded by turning her brother into another item to power your sorcery?
She sounded oddly invested in that line of questioning.
How does she know Voraine's real name? Or how long she worked for me? Was it in the notebook? No, I didn't keep personal details of that nature in the same book as my sorcery notes. Another book, perhaps? But
it had been over a year since he'd been deposed. Lydia could have learned much in that time, but there was a better explanation. Subtle things began to click together in his mind. He tried not to allow his calculations to play across his expression.
Should I change my approach? I need to test a bit.
Of course not.
She managed to sustain him quite effectively by herself for years. He was in better condition than most. He would have been healed as soon as possible, securing Riella's loyalty and silence. It's a shame you stopped me when you did. I would have cured those children. But that's not the answer you wanted, is it? You wouldn't have come all the way back here just for my sake. Perhaps you're looking to clear your conscience. Has Byron done something so awful that you're wishing that you'd kept me in charge?
Lydia narrowed her eyes. No. She balled up the paper, stuffing it back in her bag. I don't need validation. I need answers.
Ah, trying to finish my research then?
He smiled.
Perhaps you think you'd make a better god than I did.
He looked her up and down, scanning for more details. Just the slightest things, the way she leaned against the wall with a single foot pressed against it, the way she leaned downward like she was taller than she appeared to be.
Or perhaps you think you already did.
Lydia smirked. What gave me away?
Balling the paper was the confirmation I needed. Lydia never would have wasted paper in such a fashion. There were other small things as well. Mannerisms, ways of speaking. But you generally mimicked her well enough that I couldn't say for certain. The greatest hint was talking about Riella. That was out of character for Lydia Scryer. They were never close, but you were willing to switch sides at her behest, Velis.
Velis Jaldan clapped her hands softly. She retained Lydia's appearance, but when she spoke next, it was with her own voice. I'm going to be honest. I was hoping you'd catch it. Maybe not this soon, though. Makes the talk a bit more awkward.
Does it? I can understand why you wanted some answers. You didn't need a disguise.
Velis made a dismissive gesture. Wasn't really about you. The old Queenie thinks it's Scryer in here. If she knew it was me, well, another former god showing up in town might be a bit difficult for her. And I wouldn't want to end up as your cellmate. She paused, scanning the room. They can't have had you in here long. Just moved?
Donovan nodded. This morning. I suspected Tylan was looking for some sort of symmetry with Talion's imprisonment. I spoke truthfully when I said I had nothing to do with that, however.
Oh, sure. I don't really care about that anyway. We both know he could have snapped those chains anytime he wanted. She glanced up at the exposed runes on his skin. Imagine that'd be a bit harder for you without any of your toys, though.
Indeed. I'll admit I'm entirely at your mercy.
He straightened up as best he could.
But you're not here for simple revenge. What are you scheming, Velis?
Might be that I wanted a few answers, like I said. She bit her lip. Might be that I'd actually trusted you at some point, and that it hurt when I found out what you'd been up to.
Don't play me for a fool, Jaldan. You're no innocent yourself.
No, she shook her head. You're right. I have another reason I'm here.
Well, then I'd be pleased to negotiate with you.
Velis rolled her eyes. You don't exactly have a lot of bargaining room at this point, old man.
I do have the knowledge that you're impersonating Lydia Scryer, at least. I imagine you wouldn't want the Queen Regent to know about that.
Velis shrugged. I'll be long gone before you have a chance to chat with Queenie. And I'm pretty sure I'm off her Dawn's Day card list, so I'm not exactly afraid of hurting her feelings.
I'd imagine that your reputation with Lydia might be more of a concern. If you're leaving the city and you're wearing a paladin insignia...
Velis chuckled. You're reaching now. I could have gotten this old thing anywhere.
Perhaps. But I also have nothing to lose by making an effort to find leverage. You present the best opportunity I've had in some time to facilitate change.
We can talk about it. What is it that you want?
Donovan laughed. Isn't it obvious? I'd like you to break me out of here. And if you felt like looking like Lydia at the time, I would be deeply amused by the symmetry in that.
As much as I might enjoy making Red deal with the aftermath of that, I don't think so. But we'll see how useful you are, and I'll consider it.
There's no chance she'll actually break me out of here, but it means something that she's trying to give me the impression that there is one. She's always been the calculating type. It's a part of why we got along so very well.
Tell me what you need, Velis, and I'll see what I can supply.
Velis pushed herself off the wall, walking closer to him. He tensed. If she chose to attack him in this position, he truly had no defense against her. Velis made no such move. She just walked close, turned, and then walked to the mirror.
Seemed a bit gaudy, don't you think?
Ruins the decor. She moved to the bed next, yanking the top blanket off it, then draping it over the mirror.
Much better.
Donovan's eyes narrowed. He had no doubt she was aware of the mirror's function, but he felt the need to address it regardless.
You may have just limited the time we have available.
I have a feeling that was already running short, and I'd prefer to have a degree of privacy for this portion of the chat.
She stretched.
Never know who can read lips.
Adon wrinkled his nose. Shall we address why you're here, then? I've already made it clear that I can't provide you with how to reproduce my dominion marking process.
No, you mentioned losing your memories, but that doesn't mean you couldn't offer some more information than I have available. But I'm not here about that. Tell me, what do you know about the Disciples of the First?
Donovan blinked, sincerely surprised for the first time in the conversation.
You could be asking me about immortality, about divine sorcery, and you're here about a cult?
Never really cared much for your brand of life extension. Wouldn't do much for me. If I die, it's gonna be in a pile of my enemies, not ancient and decrepit.
Velis smirked.
I'm sure the real Lydia would love a sorceress theory lecture, but my tastes tend to run a little simpler. In this case, my flavor of the day is revenge.
What makes you think I know anything about a cult?
You've already shown you recognize the name, at least. Besides, you ran a cult. I figured you'd want to be familiar with the competition.
My religion was far from a cult. We had...
Velis waved a hand.
I remember I was a part of it. Remember? Let's skip the semantics and get to the point. Do you know anything about them?
Donovan nodded slowly.
Yes. But I'm afraid my information is significantly out of date. They followed someone called the Shrouded One, with apparent prophetic abilities. This Shrouded One claimed that the world would end if specific conditions were not met, often at precise places or times. Typical cult tactics. A bit of cold reading mixed with fear-mongering and prestidigitation. I didn't consider them a significant threat.
Velis nodded slowly.
I have reason to believe they may be our mutual enemy.
Mutual enemy? Well, I suppose I should pack my bags and gird myself for battle then.
He glanced left and right toward his chains.
Ah, there seems to be a small problem with that, however.
I'm not convinced freeing you would be worth the headache. But I do think you could get a degree of closure if you help me with this.
He raised an eyebrow.
Closure?
Your notes said that Cytera removed your sorceress abilities as a result of your teachings.
Donovan grunted.
It was her betrayal that led me down this path. The hypocrisy of a goddess who sought to keep the secrets of true power to herself.
I'm not going to point out how ironic that statement is. Oh, wait. I just did.
Velis shook her head.
But that's not my point. You were wrong from the beginning. Cytera had nothing to do with it.
What? You think some charlatan with a name like the Shrouded One did? The title sounds like something a 12-year-old would come up with.
Velis snorted.
No, I don't think the Shrouded One did anything to you personally, but they did at one point have a Vakess in their employ.
No.
Donovan shook his head.
I was a priest of Cytera. A Vakess wouldn't have dared to provoke...
A Vakess calling himself Jonathan Sterling was involved in a series of assassinations in Velthrin a few months back. He escaped, but not until after stealing some of Lydia's sorcery.
Velis paused for dramatic effect.
When he did, she was under the effects of a comprehensive barrier spell. A variation of your own intuitive comprehension with the same spell identification effect. It took some time for her to process what had happened, especially since she was being choked near to death at the same time. Later, she used memory sorcery to enhance her recollection of those moments and what the spell had told her. She didn't give me the whole phrase, but it contained something like Eru Ravel Lares Taris. Sound familiar?
No.
He felt his hands tightening. His mind raced. Was that phrase in his books? Could she have identified that it was the foundation of his studies? It was impossible. But the story she was telling mirrored his own so closely, it had such close proximity to something he knew to be true, he couldn't dismiss it outright. Now I'm sure you're dealing with a bit of surprise.
Surprise? Donovan's tone turned sharp, his body trembling. No, child, not surprise. You've cracked a foundation I did not realize existed.
He turned his head toward her, meeting her eyes.
If you constructed this story, I've underestimated your talents.
We all have our flaws, Velas smiled. And you did underestimate me, but not in this regard. The story is true. It may not have been Sterling in specific that stole your sorcery, but it was probably Avakess, not Saitira. Your anger has been misdirected. Would you like to correct that?
He continued to meet her gaze. Of course. But what's in this for you?
Sterling made the mistake of hurting someone I care a great deal about.
Oh? Scryer?
Velas smirked. No, silly. Me. She cracked her knuckles. And I'm going to pay him back for that tenfold. Maybe 100. Does 100 seem excessive to you?
No.
He shook his head.
Not in the slightest.
Donovan took a breath.
Free me, and I will help you with the full extent of my abilities.
Velas glanced to her side, looking tentative, then back to him.
Sorry. Doesn't seem like that's in the stars. Not for now, at least. I'll keep the idea in mind. For the moment, if you'd like a bit of revenge by proxy, fill me in on everything you know about the Shrouded One. If I can find them, I can use them to get to Sterling, and maybe Sterling will know who did this to you.
That leaves several potential points of failure between me and any sort of justice. I dislike dealing in such uncertainties.
Sometimes a bad deal is better than no deal at all. Velas glanced toward the mirror, then back to him.
I can give you my word that I'll make an effort to find out who took your sorcery and why. That's the best I can do right now. And I think we're running out of time.
So soon? But there's so much more I need to know now. So many more details that are missing.
Donovan sighed and straightened himself. He glanced at Velas, a goddess he'd forged himself, and for a moment, he felt a remnant of pride.
You've beaten me,
he realized.
I have no good options left. Very well,
he lowered his head in a gesture acknowledging his opponent's victory.
I'll tell you what I know about the disciples of the First, and about the Shrouded One, but under one condition.
Velas tilted her head to the side.
Oh? What'd that be?
You have the Heartlance, I presume?
Been a bit of a mess, but yes. It's currently accessible to me.
Adon examined his former disciple, feeling the hint of a smile that mirrored her own.
Good. When you find the one who took my power, I want you to teach them how the Heartlance earned its name.
Velas's grin widened.
With pleasure.
Prologue 2. Jonan, 1. Partners. Jonan slipped out of the jail cell right after Velas, allowing her to close the door behind them.
Well, this is nostalgic.
He nodded to her, making a gesture to indicate his use of sight sorcery. She made a hand sign for understood in return, then spoke aloud.
You got us both hidden?
Of course. What sort of amateur do you take me for?
He glanced back at the door.
I assume you cut off the sound around us?
Velas scoffed.
Please. I did it the moment the door was closed.
Good.
Jonan reached out an open palm. Velas rolled her eyes.
Oh, fine. You win. I don't think he noticed you at all. But for what it's worth, I should get credit for being extremely distracting.
She reached into a pouch at her side, fishing out a silver coin and pressing it into his palm.
I never doubted your performance abilities. That was a part of why I made the bet in the first place.
He tucked the coin away.
Are we going to help him?
Velas shook her head.
Not directly.
Too much risk. Too little potential for reward. And given what I just told him, he might even cause some trouble for us.
That's a pragmatic response, but I know you were close to him at one point. You don't feel bad about his situation?
He's a good talker, but he knew the risks with what he was getting into. And they'll let him out of this particularly gilded cage soon enough and throw him somewhere he'll be more useful. I think Tylan just moved him in here to give Lydia the impression she was in complete control. Adon would be dead if she didn't have further uses for him.
Very well, then. Shall we continue this chat somewhere more comfortable? Jonan gestured to the hallway that led back toward the keep's entrance.
Sure, but you should make me visible again. I think that went smoothly enough that people should see Lydia leaving. We don't need an emergency exit.
Jonan made another unnecessary gesture. It's done. He considered telling her to make sure she adjusted the sounds around them again, but he stopped himself. She knew what she was doing. They made their way to the exit without any difficulty. Jonan smirked as Velis checked in with Captain Shaw to let him know she had finished her visit. Shaw had been one of his first contacts in the city, and the one who had helped him arrange for Talion to be put in that particular cell along with the mirror. He felt pretty good about how things in Orlan had turned out, at least initially. He'd accomplished his goal of overthrowing Adon with minimal difficulty. Riala had been his biggest threat, and he'd ended up recruiting her to his cause. He'd maneuvered Talion and Lydia into doing the heavy lifting, and thus the Thorn Guard hadn't been implicated in the slightest in the regime change. He'd even managed to secure the Heartlance, a valuable artifact. But every victory earned was on behalf of someone else. Every resource he'd obtained had lined Ayara's coffers further, just as they always did. And given Velis's presence in the city, and the fact that Adon's sorcery had likely been taken from him by a Vakes many years before, it was abundantly clear that he was just one of many pieces Ayara had in play. How many more opponents would Ayara have to take off the board before the game was over? And perhaps more importantly, what was her true goal? Even as one of her personal servants, he had little idea of her true motivations. There were too many masks. Was she Valian's loyal daughter, securing entire kingdoms on his behalf? Was she the Lady of Thieves, delighting in organizing heists of impossible scale? Was it her rivalry with the Blackstone Assassin that motivated her? Without knowing that, he couldn't determine what her next moves would be. And on a more personal note, he could never be certain how expendable he was. Velis finished talking to the guard captain without incident. Jonan followed her out of the keep, down a familiar path toward the city proper. After that, they made their way to a small house. Not the same one Jonan had used during his last time in Orlan, fortunately. That would have been far too reckless. Jonan unlocked the door and they stepped inside. After closing the door, Jonan dropped his invisibility and the illusion over Velis. His eyes itched, but that was nothing new. He'd have to change his glasses if he wanted to read anything, but that wasn't an immediate concern. Velis stretched and lay down on the nearby couch.
Not a bad use of a day. You get what you needed?
Jonan pulled up a chair next to her, retrieving a notepad from his pouch. Copies of all the runes on his skin? We can compare them with his notebook later to figure out his exact capabilities, as well as whether or not there are any on his body that weren't listed elsewhere. Both will be useful for determining what sorts of other items he has access to.
Nice. I still think it's hilarious you made a spell to look through his clothes. And I'm glad you had to be the one to do it. Don't think I could have kept from laughing. Barely managed it just knowing you were there. I kept wondering if you'd make his clothes totally invisible by accident.
Right. Now let us never speak of that again. Jonan tucked his notebook back away. Do you still happen to have access to any of Adon's other enchanted items? Velis winced.
I have the Dominion-marked armor he gave me, but I have no desire to put that back on.
Memories you'd rather let go of? Velis snorted.
Nothing so sentimental. That armor was a trap. One of the functions was teleportation, and he used it to drop me miles outside of the city when I tried to team up with Talion to fight him. Now that I know it was sabotaged, I'm not wearing it. Kept it because it was too valuable not to, of course.
It may not have been a trap. He could have just added that function in case he needed to teleport you to safety or something.
doesn't matter. I don't like the idea of wearing something that can be remotely activated by someone else. Not worth the risks, even if it had some other nice enchantments.
Such as?
Sound modification on the helmet. I can use sound shaping on my own, of course, but it saved me some effort and boosted my effective range. It also had some high-end durability enchantments, held up against virtually anything that hit me. Not against Talion, but, well, that's Talion for you. She sighed. That sword of his is a problem. Jorin shook his head. We'll worry about that another time, however. For the moment, the armor. What if you didn't have to wear it? Velas frowned. You want me to rune up? Jorin grinned. It was refreshing to have someone who could follow his line of logic for a change.
Both of us, in fact.
You sure you can manage that? I know you've read some of his notes, but dominion marking on humans is...
Jorin rolled up his sleeve.
Velas blinked. How long have you had that?
Better part of a year. It works. No noticeable side effects.
Velas gave an appreciative whistle.
Gotta say, that's unexpected. It took Morella and Adon years to crack making those.
The notes contained almost everything I needed, at least for artifacts that they'd already tested. Making a mark for any other item would be exponentially more difficult, but I suspect the armor will be in the notes. And now that we know which marks were on Adon's body, we can narrow things down significantly.
He clearly had a mark for the armor's teleportation rune, at least, since he used it on you.
Wait, hold on. What's that rune connected to?
Jorin winced.
That's for the Heartlands, isn't it? Have you been robbing my baby, Jorin?
He raised his hands in a defensive gesture.
In fairness, I haven't really used the mark much. But yes, it's from the Heartlands. The motion function.
Velas frowned.
Hmm?
Well, if you've been stealing essence from the Heartlands, has that helped you figure out what else it can do?
Jorin gave a wave of his hand, indicating sort of. That process didn't, but I found some notes. It really does interfere with healing, for example. It just doesn't prevent it entirely. It's a blood sorcery effect.
Boring. What else?
Jorin shrugged his shoulder.
There's a big one, but I haven't tested it yet. I'd have to physically hold the lance, and, it's kind of creepy.
Creepy how?
Jorin dug into the bag at his side.
The activation phrase? Don't read it out loud, obviously.
Velas read the note. Blood of the fallen, ignite my spirit.
A little theatrical, isn't it?
Velas snorted, tucking the note away.
Less creepy, more, like something a child would come up with. Or Sal, maybe.
Maybe. But I'm still a little concerned about anything that might set our spirits on fire.
Sounds uncomfortable.
Velas rolled her eyes.
Think you're being a little too literal there.
Obviously. But I don't like the idea of messing with spirit sorcery in general, and mixing it with blood sorcery sounds even worse. Keep in mind the Heartlands was probably built for Isharin, and they're a different species. Something that was beneficial to them, like, say, pulling spirit and blood essence from inside the Heartlands, could, you know, kill us? Like, a lot?
Worth considering. I can handle a lot of things that kill ordinary folks.
Then it was Jonan's turn to roll his eyes.
I'd still advise against it. Maybe get a spirit sorcerer to look at it at least.
Maybe. I'll think about it.
Velas shrugged, indicating she would not, in fact, think about it.
In the meantime, yeah, let's rune me up. Wouldn't mind one for the Heartlands, even if that phrase is ludicrous. We can tinker with the armor stuff, too. Could have started this earlier if you'd told me about it sooner.
Perhaps, but looking at Adon will reduce the number of attempts we need to make. I prefer to minimize trial and error when it comes to potentially fatal sorceress experiments.
And you didn't trust me?
Jorin shrugged.
Well, yes.
Does that imply you trust me now?
Don't be absurd, of course I don't trust you. But I do like you a good bit more now.
He gave her an exaggerated wink.
Velas laughed. Fair enough, Kestrian. Fair enough.
She took a breath.
One problem. I do have the armor, but it might be, somewhat damaged.
Damaged?
I was unhappy about being teleported.
I guess Talion wasn't the only one capable of breaking the armor after all. Jorin sighed.
We'll take a look at it later. Hopefully some of the runes are salvageable at least. Bellis gave him a nod. Right. For now, maybe we should discuss the main thing we're here for.
Not much to talk about, I'm afraid. He knew very little about the Shrouded One.
Pretty much what I expected. We knew any connection with Adon was tenuous at best. At least we've planted an idea in Adon's head that we can grow later if we need to. I don't think freeing him later would be difficult.
Jonan rubbed his temples. Sure, if we think we can point his ire in the right direction.
Seems like you did a pretty good job of getting all of us pointed the way you wanted last time around.
Bellis gave him an accusatory look.
Jonan simply shrugged. I had a good amount of prep time for that. And for what it's worth, you weren't one of my targets. Your involvement was incidental.
Should I be flattered that I didn't warrant your consideration?
Bellis laughed, then seemed to notice Jonan's growing concern and waved a hand.
Relax. I don't hold it against you. I didn't know you were involved either. It does say something that Auntie S deployed both of us into the same city at the same time, though. I wonder if she was expecting us to have to play against each other.
Guess we'll never know.
Jonan leaned back in his chair. He was being dismissive, but he did have some ideas of his own on the subject. Not the types of ideas he wanted to share, of course. Bellis seemed much more talkative about these sorts of matters than he was. Maybe she could afford to be. He wasn't any sort of physical threat to her, and she clearly knew it. Conversely, if she decided that he was an obstacle, he was going to have more than headaches and eye strain to worry about.
Right. I suppose so,
Bellis whispered wistfully. She frowned, then blinked it away and returned to the conversation with renewed cheer.
Okay. Where are we headed next?
We are not headed anywhere, I'm afraid. He reached into the bag at his left hip, retrieving a mirror. It was the wrong one, so he sighed and dug through the rest of the mirrors in the bag until he found the right one.
New orders,
he offered the mirror to Bellis, and she accepted it. Bellis took a moment to scan over the text of the letter that was visible in the mirror's surface.
Bah! We had a good thing going, you know? It was nice to finally have a partner that could keep up with me.
Jonan blinked. He was not accustomed to dealing with any sort of flattery.
Yes, it was, pleasant,
Bellis snorted.
You're a strange one, Kestrian, but I think I'll miss you.
She handed the mirror back to him.
Especially because heading back south on my own is going to be incredibly boring.
Well, at least that'll be a temporary problem. You're apparently getting a new partner for a while once you arrive.
Oh?
Bellis looked sincerely curious.
That wasn't in the letter.
Jonan smiled, tucking the mirror away.
No, I heard from your partner-to-be.
I'd tell you who it is, but I'd hate to ruin the surprise.
Chapter 1. Bellis 1. Old Friends.
7 months later, Bellis Jaldin cautiously stepped through the beginnings of a vegetable garden and arrived at the front door of a small home. It was too large to call a hut, too small to call a house, at least in her mind. She knocked on the door politely, waiting with a hand by her side. A timid-looking young girl answered it a few moments later. Bellis gazed down at the girl, perplexed, and hesitated just a moment before regaining enough of her bearings to ask a question.
Is your mummy home?
The little girl shook her head.
I don't have a mummy anymore. Daddy is here, though. Can you go get your daddy, then?
The little girl nodded and gave her a bright smile.
1 minute, please.
Bellis took a couple steps back from the door, her hand still hovering near her hip.
This complicates things, but not much.
The figure that arrived at the door a few moments later was familiar in spite of some minor alterations. Hair trimmed and dyed, loose-fitting clothes, a simple peasant cap. Enough to pass a casual inspection, certainly. Bellis's hand rested on her hilt, but she didn't draw her weapon just yet. The little girl was still right behind her target.
Irritating.
Bellis grinned brightly.
Cassius, it's so good to see you. It's been too long. Can we talk outside for a moment?
The figure's eyes narrowed.
It's Morgan Stern right now, actually, but I applaud your effort. As for your request, I'll have to politely decline. Good day.
Cassius Morn, or Morgan Stern, or whoever his current identity was, moved to shut the door.
Rude.
Velis blurred forward, putting a hand on the door.
But I've come such a long way. Surely you can spare a few moments for an old friend.
Cassius tightened his jaw, then tilted his head toward the little girl.
Head back inside, Elizabeth. Go play with your sister. I need to talk to my old friend for a few minutes.
Okay.
The little girl headed deeper inside. Cassius waved a hand for Velis to move, so she stepped back. He stepped outside and closed the door. Velis scratched her chin.
Okay, humor me. Cassius Morn, Morgan Stern, Susan Crimson, all basically anagrams or close to them. But which is the original?
Cassius shook his head, giving Velis a sad smile.
If I answer that, will you leave me in peace?
Velis laughed.
Oh, gods, no. But I am curious. You're much better at the disguise bit than I've ever been. I don't know which.
Velis saw the glint of metal in a sleeve as Cassius's hand moved upward. It wasn't a quick motion, no jerk of an abrupt shoulder rising. With less experience, it would have been easy to miss. Velis didn't bother parrying. She just stepped to the side and let the hurled needle miss her entirely.
That was a mistake.
Cassius raised both hands.
Had to try. You have me at a sincere disadvantage, and I've children to protect.
Nope. Not going to go easy on you because you picked up some strays. I'm not Talion, remember?
Cassius tilted his head to the side.
No, but I did assume you'd still behave like a paladin.
Oh, Sterling never told you.
Velis stepped back out of reach, then bowed theatrically.
You can call me Silk.
Cassius's eyes narrowed.
You're an S. I suppose that explains how you found me, but not why you're here. I told Sterling I wanted out. He signed the papers. I'm clear.
Velis tilted her head to the side.
Wait, did you actually think we could retire? After working for Vakes? Serious question. I need to know if you're sincerely that naive.
I figured there might be an extra assignment here or there, true. I was hoping to at least have a few years, get these kids into a school.
They're yours? I'm guessing not, but...
Cassius shook his head.
Strays, as you said.
I can respect that. Wouldn't want to deal with them myself, mind you, but someone has to do it. You know, Luria sincerely believed you'd come back for him.
Cassius flinched, that statement seeming to affect him more than threat of violence.
I looked into it. Too secure. If I'd known we had someone else on the inside. Did you take care of it?
Velis shook her head.
By myself? I'm not crazy. That's why I'm here. You're coming with me.
Cassius sighed.
I can't. Like I said, I'm done. If you'll check with the Thorn God office and Celia.
Velis tilted her head downward, then made a show of glancing side to side. This home was located a good 200 miles west of Velthrin, on the side of a mountain. Celir was hundreds of miles in the other direction, and also north. Cassius pressed his hands together.
Look, I'd really like to help Luria out, but I've got responsibilities now.
We can drop your kids off with Bertram. Don't worry, he's fine. He got out of town before the paladins could catch up to him.
Shame. Mithralis would be a better place with that bastard in a cell.
Cassius tightened his jaw.
Sorry you came all this way, but the answer remains the same. You could check in with the Thorn Guard office in Velthrin for some muscle.
Velis waved a hand dismissively.
You know I can't get quality that way. I'm looking for subtlety, not a raid on the facility.
She folded her arms.
Maybe I could get Sterling to help get Lori out of this mess. Do you know where he is?
Cassius shook his head.
Not a word. Let me ask you something, though. What's a shadow mean to you?
Loyalty. And loyalty is like a crystal blade. Yes, yes, I know the speech. Good of you to check, even if you're a bit late.
Cassius nodded slowly.
Luria did mention that he'd seen you use some of our hand signs, but he couldn't figure out who you were. I'm surprised they had more than one group of us in there.
Velis ran a hand through her hair.
You aren't the only one. Sterling is lucky my Vakes didn't come calling after the rash job he pulled with that last assassination attempt.
Cassius frowned at that.
You think your Vakes set us up to fight each other? Before I got out, I heard there was some kind of schism going on in Liadra.
Doubt it was deliberate. Unless you've heard something about S's going up against each other specifically. We tussle with the jewelers every once in a while, but I've never seen any conflict between S's.
Ah, I see what you mean.
Cassius nodded thoughtfully.
And I think I've about sorted this out.
Oh?
Delis put a hand to her chin.
Thought of something helpful?
Maybe. The name Silk has something of a reputation.
Cassius stretched his arms.
Is it true that you're one of Ayara's personal apprentices?
Velis nodded, noting something still inside one of Cassius's sleeves as he moved.
No, both sleeves.
Quite true. Where'd you hear that?
Heard all sorts of stories about Silk when I was growing up. Or several Silks, really. All sorts of daring escapes, training exercises. Think I might have even read a book about one of them.
Most people would be humble and say it's nothing like the stories. Truth is, it's just like the stories.
Cassius laughed.
That's wonderful. The thing is, though, there's no chance that Ayara's personal apprentice needs my help to break someone out of prison.
A knife slid from a sleeve into Cassius's hand.
So, what are you actually here for?
Information, mostly.
Velis waved at the knife.
No need to be rude.
I'd prefer to be prepared, thank you. Especially since you've already been lying to me.
Velis shrugged, taking a step back.
It's the business.
The conversation wasn't going the way she'd wanted, but that was fine. She'd already picked up a few pieces of information, and she never minded a good fight.
The knife isn't much of a threat, unless it's enchanted. He's a former Thorn Guard, so it might be, but I doubt it.
Her hand sat on the hilt of her sword, but she didn't draw just yet.
As I said, just here for information. Ayara wants to know where Sterling ran off to. He's supposed to be an S, but he's misbehaving.
Mostly true, at least from what Ayara claimed.
Sorry, not selling him out. Nothing personal. But Sterling is much more likely to come back here and chop me to bits than Ayara is. Your mentor is too busy to bother with someone like me.
Velis tapped the hilt at her side meaningfully.
That's what I'm for, silly.
I'll take my chances.
Velis didn't let him finish the sentence. She just blurred forward with a burst of motion sorcery and punched him in the gut. While Cassius was falling back, she grabbed the wrist of his knife hand. He twisted, even as he recoiled, trying to slip her grip. He was stronger than she'd expected, but she just hit him again with her free hand, and the knife slipped free. After that, she swept the knife out of the way with a foot and pressed him back against the door. He smashed his forehead downward. She twisted, but not fast enough, and his head collided with her upper lip rather than her nose. Velis stumbled back, tasting blood, and Cassius took that moment to turn and run.
So much for family.
A blur of motion, and Velis was in front of him. She punched him in the face. He staggered back a step, taking the punch surprisingly well, and then raised his fists into a high guard. A flick of the wrist, and he had another knife in his hand. Velis waved a hand downward.
Drop it, or I drop you.
Sorry, Jolden. I'll take my chances with you over Sterling.
He walked to the right. She mirrored him, not bothering to draw her sword. Instead, she tried something new.
Eru volar protetaris.
She felt a momentary jolt as the rune concealed on the back of her shoulder flared, and Velis felt essence surge through her body. She'd activated the safer of her two new dominion marks. Cassius lunged as soon as she started speaking, clearly understanding that a spell was being cast. Velis raised her arm, and the knife impacted against it just after she finished her phrase. A shower of sparks flashed from the surface of her skin as the knife skidded across it harmlessly. The sound of impact was like the dagger was scratching against a metal plate rather than bare flesh. Velis grinned.
Guess the armor's going to do me a bit of good after all.
Her opponent hopped back, wary. He was alert now, more aware of the threat that Velis presented. It hardly mattered. Cassius was a good fighter, but he wasn't Velis. She waited, let him circle a bit, enjoying the dance. She sidestepped a thrust toward her throat, then struck him again. When he recoiled this time, his nose was bleeding freely. He spat blood.
Seems like this helps me hit just a smidge harder, too. Not a bad side effect.
Velis raised her arms, keeping them in the way of any future attacks while she talked. Drawing from the armor's power reinforced her entire body, but she wasn't going to risk seeing what would happen if he hit her in the eye or another vulnerable spot.
I can always go back and beat the answers out of Loria. Inconvenient, but the paladins still have him in a cell.
Loria doesn't know where Sterling is.
Cassius took a couple steps back, then wiped his nose with a sleeve.
In fact, he doesn't know where I am either. How did you find me?
Went back to where you fought Asphodel in the woods with her and a travel sorcerer. She pointed out the exact spot. We found some dried blood. Some was yours, from when she broke your ribs.
Velis grinned.
How are those feeling, by the way?
Velis stepped in and punched him in the ribs. He'd had nearly a year to heal, but even so, he bent over double from the strike. Maybe it was lasting damage, or maybe she just hit him that hard. He managed a quick counter swipe with the knife, but Velis was ready, and she just stepped back out of reach. Velis changed her mind. This wasn't enough of a challenge, even without the sword. The rune was stealing any fun she might have had from the challenge. She briefly contemplated turning it off just to make things more sporting, but she doubted even that would offer her enough of a challenge to bother. Velis swept his right leg while he was still recovering from the hit to the ribs, then drew her sword and planted it atop his chest.
Now, we're going to have a conversation. If it's any comfort, by the time I'm done with Sterling, he's not going to be in any condition to come back for you.
Cassius was too busy coughing to reply, and for a moment, Velis wondered if she'd managed to punch a rib into something vital. That would be awkward.
Gonna have to be careful about where I hit people while this rune is on.
She took the moment to kick his hand, dislodging the hopefully final knife, and then moved back into position.
I don't know where he is,
Cassius managed after several moments of coughing.
You've got an idea, otherwise you wouldn't have risked fighting me.
Velis pushed downward on her sword, just a little. Not even enough to pierce through his shirt, just enough to give him a little motivation.
I haven't seen him in months. I can tell you where he was, but I don't...
Velis shook her head and sighed.
This isn't getting anywhere. Do we have to do this the hard way?
Cassius coughed, then looked Velis up and down.
Now you're just bluffing. You're not gonna hurt the children, so there isn't much more you can do to threaten me. We both know torture isn't effective at getting true answers.
Velis nodded thoughtfully.
You're right. I'm done here.
She lifted the sword. For a moment, it looked like she might plunge it straight back down, but when she jammed it down, it was just into the weapon's scabbard. Cassius lifted his head, coughed again, and then stared at Velis's retreating form.
What? You're just going to leave?
Velis turned her head back.
Oh no, you were right. I'm not going to get anything more out of you. I'm just backing off to give her a turn.
The shadows at Velis's side coalesced into the form of a thin, Rethri woman. The newcomer strode forward with clarity of purpose. Velis smiled, retrieving the heart lance from where it was leaning against a nearby tree.
All yours, Briala.
Velis winced as she dipped two fingers into a container of foul-smelling paste and wiped it against the thin cut on her neck. She wasn't sure exactly when Cassius had managed to cut her. Probably right when the fight had first started.
Doubt he managed to cut me after I turned on the rune, but ugh. I need to be more careful. I hate poison.
Fortunately, she remembered Talion's solution to their little assassin's test. And it was true. Thorngard always carried an antidote to their poisons somewhere on their person. Unlike the prop used in the tests, though, this one was awful. If they hadn't interrogated Cassius thoroughly, she would have suspected it was just some kind of half-decomposed fruit or something.
Could have saved us both some trouble if you'd let me talk to him from the start.
Riala was leaning up against a nearby tree, her arms folded. Her indigo eyes were narrowed in what Velis presumed to be a combination of worry and frustration. Velis waved her other hand dismissively.
What fun would that have been? You have no idea how long I've been waiting to punch that guy in the face. Eridae 14th, last year. Hmm? That's the day Sterling, Cassius, and Loria murdered those paladins.
Velis paused, treating her wound, to stare in Riella's direction.
You actually remember that?
I remember that week for different reasons.
Oh, the whole killing her own father thing.
Yeah, that'd stick with someone.
Velis shrugged, replaced the cap on the bottle of paste and shoved it aside. She took out her water skin from her pack and poured the entire contents on her fingers, trying to get rid of the foul smell. It mostly worked. She tossed the water skin to Riella next.
Fill her up for me?
Riella sighed.
I'm not a sink.
Velis grinned.
But you could be.
Riella shook her head, putting a hand over the top of the bottle and concentrating. A steady flow of water trickled down from her palm into the bottle. When it was full, Riella coughed, wiped her forehead, and walked the bottle back over to Velis. She could have tossed it back, but that wasn't her style. Velis accepted the bottle and put it back in her pack.
Thanks, Ri.
So, what do you think?
I think you should have killed him.
Wasn't what I meant. But anyway, I've always had a soft spot for kids. Must have picked it up from Auntie S. And I wasn't going to take care of them myself, so...
Riella walked back over to her tree.
You gave him your S name.
Hardly a problem at this point. Sterling already knows it. And Cassius really is trying to get out of the business. Wonder how long it'll be before the cleanup crew comes knocking. Maybe ending it now would have been a mercy.
Velis lifted her pack, slipping it back on.
Okay, I think I'm ready to go.
Riella lifted her own backpack.
Good. I'm tired of being here, and we have a long way home.
Home? Is that what we're calling Velthrin these days?
I grew up there.
With a father that wanted to kill your brother, yeah. Doesn't sound like home to me.
Velis put the thought aside.
Fair. I suppose it's a nice enough city, if you can deal with the arrogance of the nobility.
Riella didn't take the bait.
As for what you were asking about earlier, I think it's pretty straightforward. Last Cassius heard, Sterling was in Celia. That's one of the main Thorngard headquarters, and it's also where Ayara usually does business. I think she's been running us in circles on purpose.
Velis tightened her jaw.
Or he's found a way to slip around without her noticing. He's got void sorcery after all. It's possible, but I think we need to consider the fact that your esteemed teacher might be wasting our time.
That's not like her.
Velis shook her head.
Even if she knows where Sterling is located, she's got an objective behind where she's been sending us. Maybe the real goal was just to get us to remind Cassius of his place. Or maybe she expected us to follow this lead towards something else. I think we might want to fill Scribe in about this. Isn't he up near the Celia area?
Yeah, and he's not the only one.
Velis felt the scar under her right arm itch. It was distracting.
Fine. We'll contact Scribe. But if he's already in the area, he might already know.
It was Riella's turn to frown.
You think he found Sterling and didn't tell us?
Velis shrugged.
You never know with him.
If I had a good enough reason, I might keep that sort of thing to myself. But Jonan doesn't seem to have the motivation. He wasn't close with any of the targets. He'd probably be more professional.
There's a good chance it's a trap. If Sterling knows we're following him, going to Celia is a considerable risk. He'll be at the height of his power and resources in Thorngard territory.
Agreed? It sounds lovely.
Best news I've had in months.
Velis cracked her fingers.
Let's hit Velthrin first. Our paladin friends are going to want to know that we've picked up the trail.
When do you plan to tell Lydia about your other identity?
Ah, such a deliberate way of phrasing that question. You're learning, Ri.
The answer is never.
Riella paused in her tracks.
I don't think that's wise, Vel. If you keep referencing information coming in from outside sources, she's going to know something is amiss. Red knows I was Miro's, but unless Jonan has been indiscreet, she still doesn't know about our ties to Symphony. I'd rather keep it that way.
Wouldn't you?
I think we can trust her. I think she's a good person.
Riella sounded wistful, but resumed walking behind Velis. Velis rolled her eyes.
Lydia is a good person. That's precisely why we can't tell her. You think she'd let me keep this shiny paladin badge if she knew I'd been working with a Vakes from the start?
Maybe if you volunteered the information?
Bah! I work better keeping this stuff separate. If you're worried about arousing suspicions, we can pass information to Jonan and he can funnel it through to her.
Riella frowned, but she nodded after a moment.
Very well. But there will come a time when you need to tell her the truth. That's a problem for the future. Today I can just relax and enjoy the poison. Poison. If you actually start to feel anything get worse, let me look at that. Antivenoms aren't miracle cures. Oh, I'll be fine. Appreciate that you're worrying about me, though. I would feel better if we had comfy beds to sleep in tonight. No, Vel. I'm not going to try teleporting us that far. I've only tried line of sight, and even that makes me dizzy for hours. It takes years to get the proficiency to go any serious distance. We could go to the side of a cliff where you can see the bottom of the mountain. That's line of sight, yeah? Sure, if you want to land at the velocity of falling off a cliff.
Velis tilted her head to the side.
Wait, really? Doesn't teleporting skip everything in between? I don't know much of the theory behind how it works. Maybe veteran sorcerers can get it to work that way. But when I've tried going up or down a flight of stairs, it feels like I jumped and landed. Huh. What if you just take us about 10 feet above the ground, then I use motion sorcery to cushion our fall? No, Vel. We are not teleporting off a cliff.
Velis sighed and rolled her eyes.
Fine, but I'll have you know that you are no fun at all. In fact, I hereby dub you Fun Slayer.
Riella stopped to bow theatrically.
I'm honored by your beneficence, O great taker of unnecessary risks. Now that's more like it,
Velis laughed, then slowed her walk to put an arm around Riella's waist.
Now, what if you just took us down partway? Not happening. Aww.
Chapter 2. Lydia 1. Sorcery Burns. Lydia stood on the circular roof of a tall stone tower nearly 50 feet across. She was precariously close to the edge, with a 100-foot drop awaiting her if she took a step too far.
Careful. Wait for it.
She watched as a serpentine coil of flame descended from the sky, hissing as if it was alive. It was moving too erratically for her to be certain that any evasive action would succeed, and the tower's edge limited her range of motion. Instead, she held her ground, raising her left hand, palm outward.
Flames, I command you to disperse!
The flames shivered even as she did, the spell extracting a toll on her body. It was not enough. The Sirocco hovered above her, its downward movement arrested, but it shook as if struggling to break free from her command. Narrowing her eyes, she lifted her other hand and pressed her palms together, focusing on the fire. Her spell was still active, a connection still in place. She reached out for that connection with her mind, touching the original source of fire.
Vendria, buy me some time. Understood, Lydia.
Lydia couldn't see the gemstone in her pack flash, but she sensed the power of the stone activate. A many-faceted green barrier appeared around Lydia, just in time to stop a handful of flaming arrows hurled by her opponent. The arrows vanished, leaving deep furrows in the barrier where they'd impacted, but the tornado of flame remained. It shifted closer to her.
Disperse,
she commanded, pulling her hands apart. She tore the flames asunder with her word and gesture, separating the heat until it faded harmlessly. That gave her only a moment of respite, however. Her opponent was a determined one. The older man stood about 15 feet away, closer to the center of the rooftop. His hands were pressed together, his half-dozen bright metal rings shining in the morning light. He closed his eyes for a moment in concentration, then pulled his hands apart and pointed skyward.
Lightning, descend and strike!
Lydia hissed, drawing and throwing her sword in the instant before the spell took effect. A perfectly guided spell would have ignored the metal and stayed true to its course, but her opponent was not giving it that degree of focus. The lightning arced downward and struck the metal weapon, which clattered harmlessly to the ground. Layers of protection sorcery prevented the weapon from being damaged by the blast.
Interesting, but not...
She threw a rock at him. The sorcerer had a momentary look of confusion as he stepped to the side, avoiding the projectile.
What do you...
Her hand was already in her pouch, then back in motion, hurling a handful of rocks, each glowing a soft purple.
Wall!
The stone floor of the tower rumbled as a thin section of granite rocketed upward, blocking her hurled projectiles and her line of sight. That was good. It blocked his vision of her, too. She rushed closer, nearing the wall as a fiery snake, a literal snake this time, not merely a spiraling flame, circled around the wall. The elemental hovered a few feet off the ground, hissing at her as it lunged. Lydia grabbed it around the neck with her right hand, her ring flaring to life as it suppressed the creature's flames.
"Go to sleep, Tithys. Sleep."
The snake stared at her for a moment, then fell limp. She set the familiar down gingerly, turning just in time to see her opponent leveling a ring-laden hand in her direction.
"Void Lance!"
A trio of glowing black javelins appeared behind her opponent, hovering for a moment before shooting forward. Her first instinct was to raise another barrier, but she brushed it aside. Void spells were designed to counter protection sorcery. For her, there was very little that could be worse. She hurled herself forward, landing on the other side of the wall as the spears punctured the air behind her, the stone wall providing protection where sorcery could not. Her right leg screamed as she impacted against the ground, reminding her of the one type of sorcery she hated even more than Void. The sorcery that had stolen much of her old power, leaving her vulnerable enough for Sterling to shatter her limb. Even after Aladir's healing and months of rehabilitation, she still suffered with every step. It was unlikely she would ever walk properly again.
"Vendria, ideas? I do not currently sense any protections against sorcery on your opponent."
Lydia nodded once in gratitude. She could work with that. Pushing herself from the floor with a groan, Lydia reached deeper into her pouch, retrieving a vial as her opponent circled the wall. She flicked off the cap and smiled at her opponent.
"Air, push him back!"
A jet of wind blasted the older man, pushing him back several steps. He lowered his stance, attempting to steady himself, but he frowned as the winds continued to buffet him and press him closer to the tower's edge.
"That's new. Stone, wall behind me, thank you."
The rooftop shook again as another section of stone rose from the floor, forming a barrier directly behind the sorcerer. Lydia's wind continued to blow, but the wall prevented him from slipping back any further. Fortunately, it also prevented him from moving to avoid the vial that Lydia hurled through the air. Purple sand spilled out of the vial, spreading in the air as the wind whipped it toward him. He waved a hand, blasting the vial itself to the side with a burst of kinetic energy, but that didn't deflect the grains of sand. Lydia smirked as she saw a moment of confusion cross the man's face just before he slumped into a sitting position against the wall. He blinked rapidly, shaking his head.
"What? Why am I sitting?"
The paladin circled the wall, picking up her fallen sword and cautiously stepping closer.
"Aha, I see. Sand. How very traditional for dreams."
One of the rings on his right hand flared. He shook his head again, pushing his hands against the stone as Lydia took a cautious step backward.
"Quite a good trick there."
He stood, still unsteady on his feet.
"One of the best demonstrations you've made. But you're still taking too long with your incantations, especially when you're wearing a vulnerability."
He raised a hand and pointed at the ring on her hand.
"Eruvola!"
Lydia covered the ring with her other hand instinctively, but she knew that blocking his sight wouldn't stop the effect. In a moment of panic, she spoke a word.
"Shield!"
A spherical barrier flickered to life around her hand. It was a feeble thing. Nothing compared to what she might have wrought before Sterling had stolen so much from her. But when Hardigan spoke the final word of his incantation,
"Centaurus!"
Nothing happened. Lydia shook her head.
"That was a shaded trick, Master Hardigan. Virtually no one else has a bond to my ring. Using it against me isn't exactly going to be a common tactic."
The older man folded his arms, which meant he planned to lecture her again. Lydia rolled her eyes as he began.
"Oh? And exactly how short is that list? Adon, of course, the man you acquired the ring from. Presumably also some of his former court sorcerers. You never found out what happened to Verudin or Morella, did you? And what about the former Queen Regent? Could she have ever used the ring, perhaps? Not unlikely, I would think. Adon only had a few trinkets to pass about for his gods to make their miracles. Oh, and what about his other former gods? It's not like you see two of them on a regular basis.
Lydia raised her own hand, felt the barrier expire, and waved her hand at him.
You've made your point. Fine, it's a relevant lesson. Firestorm!
A swarm of tiny spheres of blue-white flame manifested right above Hardigan, streaking downward. He waved his left hand upward, and they vanished, nullified with only the slightest effort on his part.
Gods, he's still so far beyond me.
Well, that was unexpected. I rarely see such initiative. That emergency shield was good work. Focus on using quick incantations like that regularly.
She stepped forward, smacking him in the arm with the flat of her blade.
Sleep.
The weapon glowed purple as the spell took effect, surging into him.
Short enough for you?
Rude. And I'm protected from that now.
Hardigan raised his hand, showing her the still glowing ring he'd activated after she hit him with the sand.
But given that you've managed to get within reach of me, I'm prepared to call this one your victory.
Lydia blinked.
You are?
The immortal sorcerer brushed her weapon aside, laughing in his characteristic way.
Don't let your head get too big for your neck. I'm sure I'm still a bit ahead of you.
Lydia sheathed her weapon.
58-1 isn't an insurmountable advantage. I'll catch up.
Hardigan's eyes narrowed as he looked at her, his lips tightening into a more serious expression.
Yes, I do believe you will.
11 months had passed since Sterling had shattered Lydia's leg and stolen much of her sorceress power. She had spent much of that time training with Blake Hardigan, one of the three legendary immortal sorcerers. As his latest apprentice, Lydia had a rare opportunity for a glimpse at the secrets of one of the greatest minds of the civilized world. She also assisted him with his own research. Hardigan stared at the bubbling cauldron on his workbench, heated by a tiny enchanted device that sat just below it. Without taking his eyes off the purplish fluid, he reached out a hand vaguely in Lydia's direction.
Lion's Bane.
Lydia frowned.
When you mix that with the life strand, won't it explode?
Quite possibly.
Lydia sighed. It was going to be another one of those experiments. Dutifully, she walked to a nearby shelf, eyeing the dozens of containers that she had labeled and organized. Hardigan's own organization had been dubious at best, and found the vial he had asked for. She placed it still stoppered in his hand. Then she stepped back. Repeatedly. She'd learned to stand as far as possible when he was adding something to a volatile mixture. Hardigan unstoppered the vial and poured the whole thing in.
Shield,
Lydia whispered. A barrier flickered to life around her, forged from her own protection sorcery. She'd regained some of the power Sterling had stolen from her, but not nearly as much as she would have liked. Vendria must have heard her, and a second barrier appeared beneath that one, formed of the same angled green plates as usual.
Thank you. It is my pleasure.
If Hardigan ended up soaked again, that'd be his own problem. The cauldron's contents churned and bubbled fiercely, and Hardigan let out an echoing laugh as something started to crackle inside. But it didn't explode. The cauldron's contents churned for another few moments, then settled. From Hardigan's frown, Lydia might have once thought this meant he was disappointed. Now, she knew.